In 1963, I went to Madagascar at the invitation of some people there. I was wondering how they knew me to send an invitation to me, of all people on earth, when I was in Durban, South Africa. So they showed me some correspondence which they had had with an Indian diplomat. He was an Indian, stranger enough, he was a South Indian. And he had recommended me to these people as an expert in yogism. That's very interesting. For the first time, I thought, with a little bit of fear in the heart, that sooner or later this might become another ism. One more formalized, structured, and therefore dead affair. It is not meant to be that. I don't know if it'll inevitably become like that, but it is not meant to become such a deadly structure. There is nothing called yogism. It is not a cult, it is not a religion, it is not a sort of movement which should become heavier and heavier as it goes, as it flows, like a river or like the human movements. Movements are always to be avoided with all one's strength. I hope you'll bear with me one more reminiscence. This happened to me when I was a small boy, probably 8 or 9 years old. I was living in Madras city, and not far from my house there was an important temple, and there was an important festival there one fine morning. I wanted to go. The family were either not interested or they had been there already or something like that. For some reason, I was going alone. The temples, like the churches and so on, are not meant to accommodate all the people it serves all at once. You realize that if everybody in this area went to this little church, it would burst. So they don't expect all of us to go at the same time. And the entrance also is fairly narrow. As I stood facing the temple, I found an enormous crowd trying to burst in. So I also joined them. It's like a funnel. Away from the entrance, there's a wider area for people to scatter. And these people are getting into the funnel. I was one of them. It was all right, there's no problem. Then I was getting closer and closer to the entrance, and therefore the humanity was getting denser and denser. Now, I was caught in that movement. There is no going back, there is no escape. And I was moving towards the entrance. Suddenly I felt a bit choked, suffocated. And probably out of some other curiosity also, to see what was happening over the uncle's shoulders. I was too short. So I leapt off my feet for 2 seconds and the crowd moved in. For the next 5 minutes, I was airborne. Literally. I thought, my God, I'm totally at the mercy of these people. They could do what they like. You have heard of people being crushed to death in stampedes, in football stadiums, and in Africa and India during religious ceremonies. Even as late as a few weeks ago, some people were crushed to death in Africa, crowding to see the Pope. So, it's perhaps a consolation that such religious fervor exists even now, but it may not be a consolation to those of us who don't like these movements. When you are caught in a movement, you are choked, you are suffocated, it's nothing, you can do nothing about it. Right, that's your problem. Is it true? Some people like these crowds, love these crowds. Yoga is not a movement in that sense. It does not demand that you should conform. There is no demand upon you at all. In fact, it is the simplest method or technique or path through which or with the help of which one can discover what is happening within oneself. Where am I going? What am I doing? What am I? Who am I? So that obviously these questions are relevant only if you are doing something, if you are going somewhere. So that yoga does not restrict your actions or activities. If you want to pursue your religious goals, please do. If you are a Christian, go to church. If you are a Muslim, go to the mosque. If you are a Buddhist, go to the Vihara. If you are a Jew, go to the synagogue. Hindu, go to the temple. If you want to. If you don't want to, that's your business. Yoga recognizes that our problems do not have an origin outside of us. This is a simple and axiomatic statement. You may say that what happens if this lady picks up the tape recorder and hurls it at you? Does your unhappiness not come from her? Yes, sure. It seems to, not necessarily. Because if I am hurt, that hurt is experienced definitely within me. So, I must come to terms with that. I must understand that. My problems do not come from God. I don't even know where the God is. And there is absolutely no reason why that God should punish me or reward me. An unknown creature. I don't know if God knows me. I don't know what God is. We are looking for that. We are looking for this truth. And it is quite possible that when you come face to face with God, you will realize that in Him, there is no hate, there is no jealousy, there is no anger. In him there is no wish to punish me. In him there is no wish even to reward me. It's possible we might realize that. But for the person in the state of ignorance, when we consider our own sorrow, our own suffering, our own hurt, we realize it does not come, or I should say we should realize, if we are mature enough to undertake the practice of yoga, that these things do not come from others. They are experienced within me, and they are there only because I have accepted this. I am generating all this within myself in response to an external situation. It is not necessary that it should be so. I am hurt when I am called a fool only because I am one. But I don't want to believe that I am one. I don't want to accept I am one. So that at one level there is a recognition that probably I am a fool. At another level there is a self-image which I want to preserve, that I am not a fool. This inner conflict is experienced as hurt, as pain, as sorrow. There is physical pain, a toothache. Left to itself, it will probably be resolved. According to a very good doctor friend of mine in California, he says, if right from the beginning you train yourself not to depend upon painkillers, your own internal pain-killing mechanism would become highly efficient and be sufficient to deal with these aches and pains. Well, I'm afraid in the case of most of us it's too late. We have developed a dependency on painkillers and probably we'll have to live with it. But if you have experienced physical pain, you might also have experienced at the same time that no pain is unbearably painful till this wretched mind steps in and says, oh God, why should I have this pain? I am such a nice person and I have been eating organic food and I have been leading a very strict life, disciplined life. God, why should it be me? Till that idea steps in, the pain is not really unbearably painful. There is pain, of course. There is a bad tooth, there is pain. This pain becomes sorrow when this self-image steps in and says, this should not happen to me. He, all right, he smokes, indeed, all sorts of things. He eats meat, he smokes. It's all right for him, not for me. That is when pain becomes sorrow. And please remember, even this thing happens in me, not outside. Who is responsible for my sorrow? Myself. God is everywhere. And that which is everywhere cannot have ill will, hate, anything other than love. Obviously. When there is only one, one without a second, who is that one going to hate? Who is that one going to be afraid of? So all these things are irrelevant all these qualities and attributes are irrelevant in relation to God. Forget Him for the present, till you find Him. The world is totally indifferent to what you are and how you react. You must go to the Valley of the Giants one of these days. Where is it? Somewhere in the south. Look at them. They don't care a fig whether we went there or didn't go there. Whether there was a fire which consumed a part of the tree or what happened to it. There it is, standing majestically tall. Some of them, we are told, have been there for 300 years, 400 years, or even more. They don't care. The sun rises every morning in the east, or we call that east. I don't know if the sun knows. And you wonder, are you aware that we are happy today? No. Are you aware that we are unhappy today? No. Still the same sun shining exactly the same way, looking upon the whole world in the same way, not interested at all in the least whether we are happy or unhappy. And even so, our neighbors, sometimes they can be a bit of a nuisance. Sometimes they can be, or they can at least show themselves to be a bit affectionate. But it's nothing. Why is it so? For the very simple reason that nobody can make you unhappy or nobody can make you happy. It's just impossible. If I have a serious problem, you can sit with me and also cry. I am crying, you can also cry. The tears from four eyes are not going to wash away the problem or the trouble. In fact, even my own tears are not going to wash them away. There's no sense in it. And yet, we continue to blame others, including God, or ourselves, for all our sorrows and sufferings. Yoga steps in there. Find out where it is. Find out what it is. There's nothing more. There is nothing more to it. There is a brilliant and beautiful sutra in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which exhorts us, Heyam Dukkham Anagatam. Some part of sorrow or suffering, that is, perhaps your lot, has already reached you. You are born with the body, and the body has got its own inherited problems. They are there, you have got to live with it. You have got to live with these problems. You have an alcoholic relative, husband or wife or children or parents. You have got to live with them. No problem. Just as you got to live with your hair, whether it is black or blonde. You got to live with your nose, whether it is long or short. That's not a serious problem. Heyam Dukkham Anagatam. If you observe right now the source of this sorrow within yourself, what is this sorrow that haunts me, which arises in me, whether or not there is an external condition, situation that provokes it, that precipitates it. This sorrow arises in me. Where is it? What is it made of? If you are able to find this inner dynamics, it is possible for you to avoid the sorrow that has not yet reached you. It's coming. All of us who are mature know this for certain, that just as last year and the year before we were happy and unhappy in situations where we thought we should be happy and we should be unhappy, such situations will continue to arise. Last year's summer was not the last. Though it is called the last year, it is not the last. This is one more coming. I don't know why it is called the last year. Last year's winter is not last. There's one more coming now. So, just as these things keep chasing one another, the seasons keep chasing one another, happy situations and unhappy situations also chase one another. Desirable situations and undesirable situations also chase one another. These are perpetual, like day and night. If I know now, right now, how to respond to them, or how not to respond to them, then the next time they are around, I may be able to greet them as friends. Neither as enemies, nor as lovers. Just friends. Let's be friends. Hello, how do you do? When are you going? Good. Bye-bye. If you treat these situations as your enemies, you are haunted by them. If you treat these situations as your lovers, then you miss them. And strangely enough, both are equally painful. Being haunted by your enemy is just as painful as missing your lovers. So why run into this problem? Leave them alone. When they come, hello, how are you? When they go, bye-bye. Treat them as friends, acquaintances. You will be able to do that if you are able also to get familiar, to become familiar with the dynamics of experience, and that is yoga. Experience is not an intellectual apprehension or understanding. Experience is completely and totally different from thinking that you know what it is. Experience is not mental action, mental activity. Experience arises independent of thought. Experience is not thought. Thought arises after the experience, pretending that it can understand this experience, pigeonhole this experience, call it by a certain name, and then file it. Thought is a filing cabinet. Experience is something unique and totally independent of thought. Can this simple truth be understood, not thought about. That is yoga. When is this experience understood in all its uniqueness and beauty? Only when you are strong enough to be whole, to be total, not divided within yourself. Every experience, which is an experience, carries with it this wholeness, and therefore yoga is wholeness. When you sleep, it is not your head that sleeps and your tail that sleeps, the whole thing sleeps. You don't even think you are sleeping, you are asleep. There is a certain wholeness about sleep. That is why it is so holy, and that is why we go to sleep every day. So many other things we may do or not do every day, but sleep you do every day. It's such a holy adventure. Where, and unfortunately for us, that seems to be the only occasion when we are truly whole. There is an experience. But it hurts the human being that I do not know. Why do you want to know? I do not know. It's another peculiar failing of the human being, generated more by vanity than anything else. I must know. I must know God exists. Oh, God must come and stand before you. Hello, you call me? Why must you know what God is? Forget yourself. That's what is God. I don't know if you have come across people who feel insulted and very cross when you take them out for a picnic or somewhere for a birthday. Take her out for a birthday and say, come on, we are going to Bambri. Right. You take her to your father's house. But you didn't tell me that you are bringing me here. Why should I tell you that you are bringing me? I told you, we are going out today. That means forget it, give up, go. Some people are totally nonplussed in situations like that. I was not told. Why must you be told? That vanity demands that I must experience this. I must know this experience. Which means, I must know that I am asleep, otherwise there is no good. For God's sake, you will never sleep if you adopt this attitude. What happens when you sleep? You let go, let go. What do I let go? I let go that which is not in harmony. The body is lying in bed. The mind is awake, or the emotions are awake. Let go. Then you fall asleep. Can this be brought about in all situations? How does one do that? Yoga merely gives you technique by the yoga postures, by pranayama, by meditation. Whatever the yogis do, they do with the sole intention of introducing you to insight. With the help of that insight, is it possible for you to discover within yourself that which says no? When the rest of your being says yes, one little rat or cockroach says no. It's possible that it is the mind, it is possible that it is the aesthetic sense or emotional being. Something doesn't harmonize and it is resisting. Since it is resisting, there is no harmony, there is no wholeness, and therefore the experience is distorted. The experience goes on, but the mind looks at that experience, or the emotion looks at that experience and gets a distorted picture. Sorrow arises from that. Because when the whole of, or the best part of you wants it, there is one part which says, no, I do, I will not have it. And you are going to have it, and this which says, I will not have it, produces what is called sorrow, what is experienced as sorrow. It's quite simple. It is possible that it is your mind that says no, and therefore there is a thought of sorrow. It is possible that your emotional being says no, and therefore there is an emotional experience of sorrow. Wherever there is no within, when the rest of your being is undergoing a certain experience, there is sorrow. The next step is simple arithmetic. And therefore, where there is an inner conflict, there is sorrow. Is it possible to have insight? Insight really means inner light, which becomes aware of this hideous division within oneself. In that light itself, this division will dissolve. Because the division is really not there. It is created by thought. It is created by emotion. And therefore, when this insight arises, this division is dissolved. There is wholeness. Pure experiencing. If these simple factors are understood, one realizes yoga doesn't discourage us in anything that we might want to do, or what anything that may have to be done, to put it passively. And the yogi, contrary to what we have been told by some people, is a perfectly normal person who engages himself in normal activities of life, in normal relationships here, and in normal activities like even family activities or business activities or religious activities. All of them are useful, because in and through them only can the yogi train himself, or can the yogi discover himself. Let's say, if I am a compulsive liar, and he points out, Swami, you must get over this habit. You must get over this habit. And I said, oh, I see. Oh my God, what can I do? Right? I go into the Himalayas, shut myself up in a cave. Naturally, I will not lie. There's nobody to talk to. It's like a poodle I saw in a radio studio in Toronto. The girl who was going to interview me had brought this poodle in. I thought, my God, she's taking a big chance because it might start barking in the middle. It didn't. It's very quiet. Later I discovered that its vocal cords had been cut. It's a lovely poodle, doesn't make any noise. So I can also be a lovely poodle which doesn't make any noise and doesn't tell lies at all if my vocal cords are cut. But that is not the idea. The idea is, I'm not saying that therefore one should stick one's finger in a tiger's cage and say, look, I'm not afraid. You don't have to ask for trouble. There's plenty of trouble without asking. But there is no need to run away, because you cannot run away from trouble. The trouble is within you. Where do you want to run away? So, living a normal life, wherever we are, is it possible to heal this inner split where it has happened, the inner conflict wherever it has happened, the inner disharmony wherever it has happened, and to prevent this inner disharmony from arising anymore? This is yoga. And if at all it has anything to do with the way we live, it can only be healthy. Healthy in the sense of whole. That's what my Guru Swami Shivananda used to emphasize. That if you are a Christian, you will become a better Christian. If you are a Hindu, you will be a better Hindu. If you are an agnostic, you will be a better agnostic. If you are an atheist, you will be a better atheist. Better in the sense that you will be more compassionate, more loving, more affectionate, more human. And it does not lead, or it does not cause or produce disharmony in our relationship with family and friends. Once again, I must remind you, it does not mean that I would go and stick my finger into the fangs of a cobra and say, I am not worried about it. No, no. There may be a certain relationship which is not meant to be, then it is not meant to be. But there is no inner disharmony, there is no conflict within oneself, and therefore one does not enter into conflict with any other person or being in this world. This has to be very softly and gently understood, carefully understood, cautiously understood. There is no must one way or the other. It doesn't say therefore you must live with your... No. There is no must. There is no compulsion. Because the moment there is an external compulsion, you are creating an internal conflict. Something doesn't want to do it and you are forcing one part to do it, the body to do it, go through the motions of doing it. The body wants to do it and you are forcing the mind to dissociate with it. All this is nonsense. Any inner conflict must reflect itself in external relationship and produce conflict. Yoga is a beautiful art which enables you to light this inner light, to perceive the truth in this inner light. It is to find this inner harmony. Let this inner light and this inner harmony determine your lives. And in this absolutely there is no compulsion. There is no predetermined course of conduct. This is right, this is wrong. Cool. Let all these things be decided by this insight. And if at all, it will make you a more loving person, a more gentle, more kind, more human towards your own families and friends. And if there is faith, as obviously there is faith in everyone's heart, yoga can only strengthen that faith and make it more enduring, firmer, enduring. So that if there is religious faith, it will be strengthened. That is not yoga which disturbs your faith. What happens if I have faith in the wrong things in life? If they are wrong, they will drop away without your knowledge. The famous epistle of St. Paul. I think there is a beautiful verse which says that when I was young, I used to play with toys. Now that I have grown up, they have dropped away. You do not have to drop the toys. The toys drop away without your knowledge. So that if there has been an ignorant attachment to something, that would just drop away without your knowledge, without any effort. Otherwise, yoga must strengthen one's faith, strengthen one's convictions, and make one a whole and beautiful human being. That's the only end and aim of yoga. Not to create an ism or a movement and things like that.